Hello. Welcome to Blacter. Join me as I examine the best of black artists in my quest to becoming one myself. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Blacter. I'm your host, Gabe Moses. This is the fifth episode, and a very special one, if I might add. Throughout this season, I'll continue to talk about black artists as well as talk with black artists. So today, you'll be listening to the first of a few interviews this season. I had the privilege to talk with actor Nkrumah Gatling. I met Nkrumah back when we did Ragtime together at the Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival in the summer of 2018. His performance of Cole Hauswalker Jr. was groundbreaking. In this interview, we chat about his experience as a black man working in the theater. Enjoy. So thank you for joining me today and talking with me. So do you want to tell me how you got into theater?
Well, I'd always been interested in theater. I actually entered college as a music major because I played clarinet and I was going to be a band director. And that's how I actually got into college. And that's what I was pursuing initially. But, you know, it's a bit of a tougher industry over there playing instruments. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to learn all those skills. But there was a really great, you know, a musical theater program at Sam Houston State, which is in Texas, where I went to. And yeah. I started taking some acting classes there. And sophomore year, I changed my major over to be a theater major. But up until college, I'd never pursued it. My sister is an actor. My older sister is. So I had been exposed to the arts all my life, and it always had been something that I wanted to pursue. But I grew up Jehovah's Witness, and I wasn't allowed to pursue it due to religious beliefs.
Right.
So once I got older and, you know, the choice was in my hands, I decided to take a leap of faith and go with my passion.
How has it been to, like, navigate through without the support of your family, or have you had support of your family?
Oh, yes, I have support of my family. You know, just growing up, you know, we were a little bit more dedicated, I guess I hate to say that.
Sure.
My mom really is the only still participating person in that religion. Even still, she has been, you know, supportive over my career. So it didn't throw a wrench in my family or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. Do you want to talk about how it's been as a black man working in regional theaters and Broadway?
Well, you know, it could be isolating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very exposed. You're trying to find your way into industry that doesn't always see you. And if it does see you, it only sees you in a certain type of typecast.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And I feel like, you know, black men don't get the luxury the luxury of being like a Josh Gad these actors that have these wonderful character careers, you know, and on the Caucasian side, like, you know, whereas black guys have to be like sexy or funny.
Right.
You have to be obese or extremely ripped.
Yeah.
You know, there's no in between, and if you're extremely ripped, that's the only sexiness that's, you know, accepted. Mm-hmm. You know, because you have such tight standards. Like, you know, I always say the standards for a black actor, you know, especially when you're alone or you may be the only one in a show, you know, it's not that you're on guard, but, you know, everything is expected more of you.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't say it, you know that somebody can get away with stuff for years.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Years of terrible behavior, you know, and drug use, missing shows, all this stuff, and that person will still get opportunities over you. And if you do anything you know, so small, you're just not treated the same.
Yeah. It's like you have to have good behavior and talent, you know, to the T.
Absolutely. And I feel like sometimes, you know, to do theater, you have to have money.
Yeah.
really honestly, to truly pursue it without having to get another job or anything like that. And a lot of people in our industry do come from those lifestyles because their parents can afford to take them to those classes and things of those sort. So they come from a different background. So when you try to relate to, your fellow actors who come from that background, they can't relate to you because they only have one way of life, And if you talk about something that is of a different background, like, I come from somewhere different from that person comes from, they view like that they can't communicate with you. Because they don't know that. Ooh, that's rough. Ooh, that's strange. And you think, we're artists, right? That's what we do. We dive into other people's lives that we would never ever do, things that we never do ourselves. So to discount another person that you work with on a human level and say that you just, oh gosh, I can't understand them, and then to pursue this career, it kind of seems hypocritical, And I feel like, sometimes you can see that in those people's work because they're not exposing themselves to something outside of what they're comfortable with.
And I think as artists, any artist, if you're an actor, dancer, singer, you have to be open to all lifestyles, all cultures, just to educate yourself and be in the loop with your art form because you're playing everything. You're not just playing. I mean, I guess you can, depending on what you want to work with. If you're an actor, you can decide what kind of shows you want to do, but that's just not broadening your horizons enough, you know?
It's not. It's not. And it's I feel like you're cutting your hand off. And I also feel like, sometimes, I've had to work regular jobs and things of those sorts, but those in between times have been fabulous times because it got me outside of the theater, like, which is such a bubble, when you get out there with regular people and they're like, you realize how many people don't care about theater. Like, people have other things going on. They heard about Broadway, but it's, theater is such an elitist place that, though you think in that, everybody's thinking that you're the shit over there in that show, they don't know about that show. Like, it's such a small, microcosm of people who really enjoy the theater and can afford the theater, because the theater doesn't reflect them. So it makes people uncomfortable to come to the theater because they're not seeing themselves up there.
Oh, that's so true. And I think about like the cost of Broadway, like the tickets, especially for shows like Hamilton and Wicked, like you gotta have money to see those shows. So they're only targeting a certain audience, you know, wealthy
Absolutely.
people.
Well, and that's what producers do, in Broadway. They pick shows that's going to appease the median ticket buyer. And the average ticket buyer is 44, 42 to 44. That's why shows like Tootsie are being produced, Mrs. Doubtfire. Kids nowadays, they barely know Michael Jackson. They don't know Mrs. Doubtfire or Tootsie or any of these things. That's somebody who's in their late 30s to 40s to 50s who would find that interesting. And it's going to be a white suburban crowd, the one that has the money. But then after a few months and they've seen it all, it closes down because nobody else is coming to see that because it's unrelatable. It's tone deaf. It's like the Our Town, that they're producing and everybody was kind of upset about. That after all of this, the first thing he produces, Our Town?
Not so relevant,
You
huh?
know? I was like, it wasn't even multiculturally cast, like, so.
So your first show was Hair on Broadway, correct?
It was.
So I did that show my senior year of high school. And
Interesting.
a lot of people are like, "Wow, that's interesting." But I went to a performing arts high school, so we took a lot of risk with our shows, and that's something I appreciated because they didn't just do shows for their audiences; they did shows for their students and the shows that their students could be in, you know, 10 years from now. So that's something I appreciated, and I definitely learned a lot from that show, not just about myself but
Yes.
about other people. So I'm interested to see what your experience was like with it.
Well, Hair was my, like, literally my all-time favorite theater experience I ever had. And I think it's, anybody who's done Hair, like, if you are let it resonate with you, it was it's an amazing show to do. Like, you know, it's the only show I've ever done where I could just be completely free on stage. You know, and it was special because I remember when that show started in Central Park. I was still living in Houston. I just graduated and I was just obsessed with the show, obsessed with it because I loved the Actors Fund recording of it. And I was like, oh my God, they're doing hair. And like, you know, I always believe in the spirit. And like, my spirit was like, you're going to do that show. Let's go do that show.
Yeah.
And they got to do this big spread in Vogue magazine. And I was like, wow. And then a year later, I moved to the city and it was the first show I saw immediately. I was like, I put my bags down, went and bought that ticket. I sat in the second to last row, third seat in, house left, balcony.
Yeah.
And my life changed watching that show. I just didn't know it was going to be like. I love the music. I'd never seen a production. Gavin Creel came all the way up there. Laid in my lap. I was like, whoa, that's dedication, dude. Wow, I was like, you ain't got to come up here. You make money, Gavin. you know?
Yeah.
But they all loved it so much. You could tell everybody loved that show. I wept. I cried. The next year, I earned my equity card at the Goodspeed doing a musical called Band Geeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they paid for it partially. And because the pay was so low on it, like, you know, when you earn your equity card, sometimes they give it to you the last 2 weeks. So for the whole process, I've been only earning so much. So the last 2 weeks, you finally got an equity paycheck and it wasn't enough to pay that off. And I was like, okay. And then the announcement came out for the tour. And I was like, oh, like about a month or so after that show had closed. And I was like, I need to check on that equity card. Like, you know, I got to pay that off.
Yeah.
And I called them and they were like, yo, you can make payments. And I was like, really? Nobody had ever told me that I could make payments. Nobody had actually really given me any instructions on how to, like, move forward with that. And I was like, well, okay. And I was like, well, if I make these payments, I could pay it off. And the audition was in July. And I paid it off the day of the audition.
Wow.
I got my temporary equity card. I felt so great. I was like, this is my first equity audition where I actually don't have to wait in line.
Yeah,
I signed up for the EPA. And, you know, I always tell people when something's for you and something is meant for you, it happens. You don't have to fight.
Yep.
You're never running late.
Yeah.
You're never uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You're never nervous. The room isn't a bad room. You know, it just goes boom, 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 boom.
Right.
And I booked that show and I couldn't believe it. And then while we were touring, they didn't know what to do with in the summer of 2011, because they hadn't booked anything and they wanted to take the show internationally, but the show didn't get picked up by Korea and Japan.
Yeah.
And they set us all down and they were like, well, how about we go back to Broadway for the summer? Which was amazing because that tour, that first national tour, had a lot of kids like me just earning our equity cards. Like, you know, all of us were like, we're about to make a Broadway debut. Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Like what? Like out of the blue? Like, God, what are you doing? Like another, just God just gave me that. And I did that show for 2 years. I loved doing every minute of it.
Yeah.
It's always a show that, you know, even if you're tired, there's a song that'll get you moving. Like, know?
Yeah.
There's a song to pick you up. You'd be like, I don't want to do this. And then, like, you know, White Boy starts. You're like, let's get this going. Let's jam. Or you start doing, like, Ain't Got No. And you're like, you know, you can get your emotion out in that show, too. Even if you're, like, not wanting to be there that day or you, like, sad about something, you know, you really could. So it was an amazing, amazing experience. I mean, it definitely had its challenges.
Yeah.
You know, and you learn about, you know, some of the harsh realities of our business.
Right.
But overall, I always will look at that time as like just one of the greatest blessings to have ever happened to me.
Yeah, that's great. And then you were in Miss Saigon. What year was that?
2017.
So what was that like? Were you the understudy?
I was the understudy. They actually auditioned for that show for a full year. I went through the first round, made it to the end, never heard anything back, went on vacation. Got a call saying they were going to redo the auditions again in August. Did all five rounds again. And later on, I booked it. And yeah. they gave me the understudy. And, you know, that was a different experience, you sure. know. Saigon was more of a mixed bag of mm-hmm. a show.
Right.
I enjoyed it and I didn't.
Yeah.
And that happens. Sometimes right. you get in shows you like it and sometimes you don't. Mm-hmm. But that was a big challenge, you know, understudying something and the pressure of doing that and the things that go around that can be very exhausting on a person.
Sure.
And just understudying, period, like, you know, being mm-hmm. ready, being on yeah. call, like, yep. you know, like, you never know when it's going to happen. And yep. it's like all eyes on you. And, you know, you yeah. never really get to sink into the character.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it never really becomes yours.
Right.
You know, unless you're, you know, it's different from doing it every single day. Like, you yeah. know, you're because now you're thinking about your show, but also everybody else's show, mm-hmm. you know.
Did that, you ever you know, get you're the filling chance? In. Did you ever get the chance to rehearse during the rehearsals?
As oh, absolutely.
The okay.
Absolutely. You know, you always have understudy rehearsals every week.
Uh-huh.
Because there were two understudies for the part. So yeah. every role has two, sometimes three people who understudy it. Right. And then you kind of cycle each week. You take turns playing the part. Or if you have right. two understudies, like if you understudied Ellen and Gigi.
Right.
You know, there's a girl that did that. So sometimes you come and play Ellen, sometimes you play Gigi, but it's required once a week understudy rehearsal.
And how do you keep up once the shows start? How do you stay in tune with everything?
In what sense?
Just like knowing your stuff and being ready just in case you have to go on.
I mean,
yeah.
Well, you know, the part I understudied, I knew it already, actually, because I had already played the part
okay.
on a mini tour yeah. at Kansas City's Starlight. I already had played John. So I'd already done it in a touring form. It's just a different pressure. You right. know, you judge yourself differently. You want them to appreciate you. And it's also like, you know, Broadway is commercial industry. It's the yes. commercial side of our industry. So it's about the monetary value of the situation and of a person. And then, you know, it's different from like a regional theater where, you know, they're very subscriber based, you know,
yeah,
they sell subscriptions just like, you know, Pennsylvania Shakespeare,
right.
you know,
right,
it's donor based.
Yes.
And whereas here in New York, it's about the show making a profit.
Yes.
So that changes the way people look at what's going on stage.
Right.
Definitely. And there's a different pressure.
Oh, yeah. And did you ever go on for the role?
I did several times.
Great. Yeah, yeah. And how was that like?
The first time was nerve-wracking. You know, as I said before, like, you know, it's sometimes you feel like you're putting on someone else's suit.
Right.
You're putting on someone else's suit. You know, it's not your suit. You know, everybody is adjusting to it. Like, you know,
yeah.
and sometimes that day there's other people out of the show too. So now there's a yeah. bunch of different things going on stage and mm-hmm. you have to be cognizant of that because for right. safety and just for all that stuff, like, you know, so you're never fully in grip of it. You know, yeah, I did a fabulous job. I loved it. It was wonderful. But compared right. to like when I've actually played a role, like, you know, when you actually play the role every sure. single day, it's just a different,
yeah.
different feeling, you know, just like with yeah. swings, like, you know, swinging is one of the hardest things mm-hmm. in the world. Like, you know, I hats off to always to the swings because,
oh, yeah.
you know, you're constantly putting on somebody else's suit,
yeah.
but that suit, you know, affects other people too. And you want to make it go seamlessly, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But it's
and
like,
it's interesting
know.
For Broadway too, when you're going on for a lead role as an understudy and the audience is expecting to see, or maybe they bought tickets to see that person in the lead role and they don't get that. So there's also that layer to add on too that, you know,
absolutely.
You're not. Yeah.
So you want to, I guess that's what I meant by like the profit aspect. You want to show up and you want to make sure that your producers or, you know, the assistant directors or, you know, a lot of, sometimes they'll come and see the understudies go on when it's time to go on to yeah. see if they have that professionalism, can show up and, you know, sell that role just as well as the person who they initially put into the part.
We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the episode.
So you did Ragtime twice in the last 2 years, right?
Yeah.
And the first was at Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival. So do you want to talk about just what you've learned from that show, doing it two times, and what you learned from Cole House and all that?
I've always loved the show, period. Like, yeah. you know, I, for me, this show doesn't really teach me anything. This uh-huh. show is a tool to teach others.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Ragtime is a tool to teach others to reach, to, it's just like hair. Mm-hmm. A principle, there's a want for change. There's a mirror for society in it. The innocence of lost lives over ignorance. Yeah. Cole House is a powerful character because, and one I think every Black man in a musical theater loves, because he's the only Black male lead character that is mm-hmm. written with sensitivity and family.
Yes.
Yes. He's allowed to be emotional. Mm-hmm. He's allowed to be fragile. He's not just some big buck up there.
Yeah.
You know, you forget about that and you relate to his humanity, his family, his family.
Yeah.
And he becomes universal. Theater. You don't exactly. see that in musical yeah. theater, Black people having families, you know, and Black men in that sort of a position and the way he's presented from the beginning, you know?
Yep.
He's well-spoken. He is mm-hmm. well-off. He mm-hmm. is well-respected. You know, he's a good-looking man. You yeah. know, you're it's shock. It's a shock to the audience, too.
Yeah, yeah. But I was going to say.
The when... role, you know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you got to take them, too. You have to, you know, as yeah. you say, like, you know, we perform this to a lot of predominantly white audiences, right. you mm-hmm. know, which is just, I mean, I did Porgy and Bess for on tour, and we never had all Black audiences. Like, you know, yeah. it was usually white, because as we go through, it's who can afford and who doesn't feel left out of the theater.
Yeah.
But, you know, because Cole House becomes a terrorist. It becomes a terrorist.
Yep.
But you, as an actor, have to display that role in the way that, and I mean, period, the Aarons and Flaherty were great in E.L. Doctorow, excuse me, and taking them along on the ride. Because sometimes a person doing something, it's not always black and white. You know, it's gray. There's gray.
Yeah.
And people hate that. You know, yeah. people always want things to be black and white, but we forget about gray. And there's a lot of gray when it comes to your philosophies.
Sure.
You know? Because, he's doing some wrong right here. But he did everything right. He went to everybody. He followed all your orders. They weren't doing anything. And when they see that show, they can relate to just right now. Same stuff. Right now.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say, like, when you're not getting what you want for so many years, what's the final answer? What are you going to do to get what you want? And then what that thing that you're doing to get what you want, finally, that's wrong again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the fact that you disrespected this man.
Mm-hmm.
He never did anything wrong. He asked you for directions. And then you kept messing with him because you just didn't like he had something that you thought you should have. And even then, he walked away from you. And you, because you couldn't get his goat, you went further.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even then, he goes to the cops, asks for help from everybody, and then you kill his wife.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's one of the most heartbreaking moments in that show, is, you know, Sarah's trying to be on your side. She's doing what she can as a black woman during that time, and then she gets knocked down. She gets killed.
And it's so important for him to be a man. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a man. This is the turn of the century. He is never seen and is probably not related to any free black man who has been his own man. You know, that's powerful. Mm-hmm. It's important to him. It's so important to him. That's why he's so prideful about that. You know, that's why he says, I'm not going to marry you.
Yeah.
And that's that thing that he chooses then. Because they both make bad choices, him and Sarah. Because they're impulsive.
Yeah.
They're impulsive. That impulse, that stubbornness is what drives him, because he regrets it for the rest of the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like when they always say, you always leave with I love you on your lips before you leave the house, always. Because you may never see that person again.
Yep. Yeah, each day is not promised. And yeah.
You know, and that especially, hurt. You know, mm-hmm. It means like I hurt her.
Yeah.
I hurt her emotionally, and she died still trying to help me. It'll break your heart.
Yeah.
It should break your heart.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It broke all of our hearts on that stage, like singing till we reach that day, standing next to you and looking over her body and knowing all that you just talked about is just, you can't put words to it, you know?
It's a powerful, powerful, powerful show, you know? Yeah. And if it's done right, people are always like, you know, even when I played it again, they're like, why? They're always affronted by my passion in that scene.
That's interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
Because you're like, man, you do that scene. You got to.
Yeah.
You have to.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, how can you sing and you're crying like that?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's like, you're crying all over the place in Karuma.
Well. Like,
but I have to. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
This whole place. Yeah. I want the most hateful person in this room to hate this innocent, mm-hmm. sweet person.
Yeah. To understand, to relate.
This family trying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember when we did that talk back, and I don't know if you were there, and that guy, there was a white guy sitting there.
Yep.
And yeah, he was, you know, said that it blew him away and changed his principles. So that meant he had no compassion for people of color before he came in.
Exactly.
And I could just see him, how shook he was, because he was emotional.
Yeah.
He was so emotional about that.
Mm-hmm.
And just, what a fool I've been. I should have voted differently, you know? That's why I love, 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 love doing that show.
Oh, yeah.
It is a show that you have to, you can't shy away from. And that, I will say, in doing the shows, you know, I found that both the directors wanted to shy away from some of the subject matter.
Definitely.
You can't do that.
No, no.
A, we as actors, the actors who are performing this piece, or you're asking them to do something that's out of their character. You know, racial slurs and, you know, bigotry is hard. And I know it's hard for my fellow Caucasian actors.
Yeah.
Especially if they're your friend and they're like, God, I've never even said that word in my life. You know, we have to, the cast has to come up with, just like in Hair, you have to be safe with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to talk about it. Like, you know, the white folks can't be afraid. No, you say that's our problem in the United States. Like, you know, you have to, there's communication. When there's no communication, nothing works. Just like in any relationship, key is communication. You can't be afraid to say, I'm confused. You can't be afraid to say that, you know, maybe I do view black people like this because my mom do this, but I don't know why. Is it okay? Yep. Well, then we need to have that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's going to beat you up about that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're trying to understand, you know, I mean, I was really disappointed. Unfortunately, in Philly, we weren't as aggressive in the attack of Sarah. It was very staged, you know, because they didn't feel comfortable, you know, treating the actress playing that role in that way. You know,
yeah,
which I understand,
absolutely.
But if you don't, if you don't, if you leave that element of violence out, it loses its power a bit that moment. You know?
It's kind of lying, you know,
because it's the only violence in the show. It's the only violence in the show. And I understand that you as didn't, you know, as an actor, it made you uncomfortable to do that. Yeah. Like, you know, you hate representing things like this, but
you chose to always do that show.
You did. Yeah. And, you know, you're an actor. You're an actor. And we've got to do this. And I was about to do it for a third time, but unfortunately, it got canceled.
Yeah.
So that's what I said. I was like, I've only done this two times. I thought I did it.
Like, this was like the 15th time.
I was like, I know I was doing it again. Now, coronavirus canceled the show out in California. So.
Oh, okay.
But luckily, they asked us back next year, and we'll do the show.
That's good.
Then, you know, my Willie Conklin that was going to be out in California, just the sweetest guy.
Yeah.
You know, and we were doing a round table. He couldn't even get through it.
Wow.
Without weeping about his character, you know, sure. And he's like, I just don't want to have to call you this every day. And I don't like being this person, but I know I have to. And it sucks because this person is real and he's out there. And if he wasn't, I wouldn't have to do this on stage.
Right.
And he's just like, looked at me. He's like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And I was like, oh my gosh, no, you're fine.
Yeah.
You're fine. You're fine. I got you. I trust you.
Yeah.
I was like, and I want you to say what you got to say on this stage as passionately and as vehemently as possible. Because if you shy away from it, then the audience member who is uncomfortable by that language is shying away from it too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They're uncomfortable. If we shy away from it, okay, cool. They kind of move through that. No. Hit them with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should be shaking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This one producer I worked with said, theater happens in two places, in the theater and in the car ride home.
Yeah. Yeah. They're still talking. If they're still talking about it when they leave, you know you've done your job.
Yeah. And after that show, you know, it's just riddled with so much.
Yeah.
And it's a show that resounds with people because this is 100 years ago, almost to the day.
Mm.
And the same things that are going on in the show are the same things that are happening now. So if that is the truth, then these things are the pillars of which America are built on. They were never handled, you know, they're the foundation of our country.
Yeah.
And unless we look at them, and that's why that show shocks people, because we're good at closing our eyes. You know, Americans are good at being nice, not kind.
Yeah.
We're always told to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Kindness is different because kindness requires empathy. There are a lot of people around who'll be nice to you. Doesn't mean that they genuinely care.
Yep.
But kindness is different. It's an empathetic action.
Yeah, that's great. Do you have a favorite moment in the show or a favorite song that always resonates with you?
Oh, I have a few.
Yeah, yeah.
A few. I love Wheels of a Dream.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously. You know, that whole sequence, new music into Wheels of a Dream, it's just like, there's not a dry eye in the house, you know. Mm-hmm. She finally comes down those stairs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I love singing the soliloquy.
That's great.
That's one of my favorite.
We would always like dance to that backstage and like root for you while you were singing that song. Because like it gave us energy to come on and be behind your back and be like, yeah, that's what he said. That's right.
Mm-hmm, you know, because it's such a hard start to the show.
Yeah.
And he's so different. He's so different. It's not this, you know, the show starts off so dreamy.
Mm-hmm.
That the tone has changed.
It reels you in. Yeah, it reels you in.
You know, and you're like, oh, well, we're different now. Then he starts burning stuff up.
Yeah. Oh, I like, see where this is going.
He is not playing piano anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love Sarah Brown Eyes.
Oh my God, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? You don't get much in the backs. You get nothing in the backstory of them, of their relationship, except for that one song. And it comes at almost the end of the show.
Yeah.
You know, the point after where he's gone died. So far. over the edge. You know, he is mentally broken and lost. And you see him come out that fog. She brings him up because that's what she's always done. And love is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's what she always does for him. You know, and when it all ends and he's left there alone again, God, the vacuum, especially after, you know, Atlantic City.
Yeah.
It brings you back to like, see, there's still some serious stuff going on here.
This is reality. You know,
this is still happening, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one of the most beautiful moments.
Yeah. One of the song after that, he wanted to say, I loved just being in that song and just listening, because one of the lyrics that moved me was, we have different lives and places, but in different lives and faces, but our hearts have common places. That always just gave me chills, you know, because it was the one moment in that show where you saw a connection between men who looked different, but weren't different.
Mm-hmm. Then it's the first white man that is kind to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the only white man that is kind to him through the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and sensitive and sees him as a human. And, you know, he's the only guy. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous piece, you know. And I just love how that there are times where there's, you don't know what to say,
mm-hmm.
but it's saying so much in your mind. And this whole song is based around, I know how to blow things up.
Yeah. Right. Right. It's like the subtext that you'll never get in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also make them hear you. Like, come on.
Of course. Well, that's the showstopper.
I'm interested to hear how it is for you, like singing that to a bunch of young black men.
But now you're gonna get me emotional.
Yeah.
Well, you have to, you know, as the character, let's go with that first. You know, in his rage, he forgot he was a father. And what Booker T says is powerful. Now you're going to lose these kids' lives too? You know, and he's been so angry.
Yeah.
He's been so mad.
The whole act, yeah.
You know, and it's out of his character. It's out of his character.
Mm-hmm.
If he was an angry person, he would have got angry at Act One.
Yeah.
You know, that means he's had a mental break. You know, and I feel like he wakes up and he finds himself again and he goes back to dignity, because that's what he admires in Booker, the upstanding Negro. When they go low, you go high. And I know I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And I got, you know, as a leader, as somebody who's leading people to get a gang leader, you got to calm them down. You got to make sure that they listen to you, you know, and to quell the situation.
Right.
Because he's realized. And as a black man myself, it's encouraging, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, the times I play it, you know, well, anyways, it's just like in the script that you walk around to each of them and you have your moment with them. And as a person, as another fellow black actor, and after having done this mountain of a show, you know, I've always viewed it as like, it's me saying thank you to each one of my friends and fellow actors on stage, but to hold them and let them know that, you know what, we are special.
Yeah.
We are special. We are beautiful. Go do this. Thank you for sharing the stage with me today. Be beautiful. Because there's a message in here that's about us. And, you know, it's a show that I can't come down for a while.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know, it's a journey that you go on as an actor.
Yeah.
You know? And it'll, you know, upset me afterwards. And I know other people are going through that too. And that moment always feels so real. It feels so real. Because there's a mutual understanding between African Americans, black actors. There's a mutual understanding between any black person to another black person.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
About that mutual pain we share, wherever that pain is in each one of us, whether it's it lives there. And to think that the first time he was seeing his boys and stuff was when he was getting ready to go out, and the last time he's getting ready to go out. It's heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
It's heart-wrenching, you know? It's a...
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that's one of the most hardest parts of the show, to be emotionally in control.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Of myself. After everybody leaves, and you're just left there with Father.
Yeah. God, I couldn't... Yeah. Just, like, walking out with other guys, I'm just like... We can't leave him. Like, come on. Like, I just felt so bad, you know? Yeah.
That's a powerful moment. Like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And his last moment is spent with Father, who has not been on this man's side.
Sure.
Since the get. And it takes all this and a man getting shot down in front of Father to reach his heart.
Yeah, I'm kind of thankful I was never on stage because I was getting changed for the last the finale. I was thankful I was never on stage for that because I would have just, you know, lost it. Yeah,
it's a shocking scene, you know. And then, like, as an actor, you put yourself in that situation. And here's a little secret: sometimes I don't believe in my acting a lot, so I really try really, really hard to expand my acting. Like, you know, we all have our insecurities and things of those sorts. Like, you know, so
right.
We all do that as actors. Like, you know, we're like, we're so judgy of our work, you know?
Right.
But really in that scene, it was always from playing it the first time with you guys, like, you know, that's what I really wanted to focus on as actors. Like, how do I make this as real as possible?
Mm-hmm.
You know, opening a door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Opening the door
mm-hmm.
and walking outside.
Yeah. Those physical moments when you have to react to violence on stage is always hard, too, because you want to make it look truthful and you want to make it feel truthful. But, you know, there's technical and mechanical stuff that you have to keep in mind, too. Yeah.
That one was really realistic.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania Shakespeare was, I mean, like, they really.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. The lighting and the sound, spot on.
It was really, really intense. They did a great job with that. Yeah. It was, you could feel it.
All right. Well, to end on a lighter note, can you talk about who or what inspires you to do what you do?
I think, well, you know, to ask that question right now, it's just, it's just an odd time.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, you're right.
You know, it's an odd time for our industry sometimes to be inspired by our industry. Especially with all the things coming out about race and yada, yada, yada. And you see people for who they are.
Yeah.
You may have known always. But, you know, it's different when they make a stand or don't.
Yep.
So, man.
Who inspired you to start this whole journey?
You know, dynamic performers, The Wiz. The Wiz actually started me off on my journey.
Same here.
But also, it's like the only Black musical that was like out.
Yep.
You know, that was glorifying and amazing and had the stars. It was just, it's a beautiful, beautiful movie. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to get up there. You want to.
Yep.
You want to be a munchkin, like, you know? And then other singers, you know, I love a little Liza Minnelli and Judy Garland. Brian Stokes Mitchell. You know, those ones that are just Audra. The ones that just shake your soul with their work. My sister, my cousin. Yeah, so many different inspirations. Because I was just exposed to so much as a kid. Thankfully, like, you know, a good variety of music. Like, you know, always, you know, had some sort of dance or, you know, Alvin Ailey being watched in the house. Or, you know, so those visual components, like, you know, have always, you know, inspired me. The Lincoln Center shows coming on PBS growing up.
Yeah.
You know, PBS was always that wonderful avenue, you know, when you're sitting in East Texas and you're like, gosh, New York is so far away, you know, and you put on PBS and you can see these, you know, different performers that you've never, you know, heard of, but then you learn about their work and, you know, you start following and getting more inspired. So,
yeah.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. You can follow me on Instagram at Gabe J. Moses. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get updates on new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. Until next time, I'm Gabe Moses, and Black Artists Matter.